Gentlemen, but it appears the unmentionables are not doing business tonight. Looks like we'll have to do the interrogation ourselves. We're not very experienced at this, so I hope we don't get it wrong. Now, listen carefully. Are any of you serious conspirators bent on the overthrow of the government? There was a stunned silence from within the wagon. Come on, said Vimes. I haven't got all night. Does anyone want to overthrow Lord Winder by force?
Well, no, said the voice of Miss Palm.
Or by crochet?
I heard that,
said another female voice sharply. No one? Shame, said Vimes. Well, that's good enough for me. Lance Constable, is it good enough for you?
Yes, Sarge.
In that case, we'll drop you all off on our way home, and my charming assistant, Lance Constable Vimes, will take, half a dollar off each of you for travelling expenses, for which you will get a receipt. Thank you for travelling with us, and we hope you will consider the hurry-up wagon in your future curfew-breaking arrangements. Vimes could hear shocked whispering behind him. This was not how things were supposed to go these days.
Sarge, said Lance Constable Vimes.
Yep.
Have you really got the eye of a mass murderer?
In the pocket of my other suit, yes.
Sam was quiet for a while. When he spoke again, he seemed to have something new on his mind.
Sarge?
Yes, lad.
What's a tuppity upright, Sarge?
It's a kind of jam donut, lad. Did your mum ever make 'em?
Yes, Sarge. Sarge?
Yes, lad.
I think it probably means something else as well, Sarge, said Sam, sniggering. Something a bit rude.
The whole of life is a learning process, Lance Constable.
They got the wagon back to the yard 10 minutes later, and by that time Vimes knew that a new rumour was fanning out across the city. Young Sam had already whispered things to the other officers as curfew breakers were dropped off. And nobody gossips like a copper. They didn't like the unmentionables. Like petty criminals everywhere, the watchmen prided themselves that there were some depths to which they would not sink. There had to be some things below you, even if it was only mudworms. Rosie Palm bolted the door of her flat, leaned on it and stared at Sandra.
"What is he?"
said Sandra, dumping her work basket on the table. It clanked within.
"Is he on our side?"
"You heard the lads," snapped Rosie. "No bribes now. Then he drags us off to Swing's bastards, and then he won't hand us over. I could kill him. I've rescued him from the gutter, got Mossy to patch him up, and suddenly he's playing big silly games."
"Yes. What is a tuppenny upright?"
said Sandra brightly. Miss Palm paused. She quite enjoyed Sandra's company, and the extra rent certainly came in handy, but there were times she wondered whether A, she should have a talk with the girl, or B, she was being very gently wound up. She suspected the latter, since Sandra was making more money than her most of the time. It was getting embarrassing.
"It's a kind of jam donut," she said.
"Now, you'd better go and hide the..." Someone knocked on the door behind her. She motioned Sandra through the bead curtain, took a moment to pull herself together, and opened the door a fraction. There was a very small old man standing in the hall. Everything about him sloped hopelessly downwards. His grey moustache could have been stolen from a walrus, or a bloodhound that had just been given some very bad news. His shoulders sagged listlessly. Even parts of his face seemed to be losing the battle with gravity. He held his cap in his hands and was twisting it nervously.
"Yes?" said Rosie.
"It says seamstress on the sign," the old man mumbled. "And, well, since my old woman died, you know, what with one thing and another, never been any good at doing it for myself."
He gave Rosie a look of sheer, helpless embarrassment. She glanced down at the sack by his feet and picked it up. It was full of very clean but very worn socks. Every single one had holes in the heel and toe.
"Sandra," she said, "I think this one's for you."
It was so very early in the morning that late at night wasn't quite over. White mist hung everywhere in the streets and deposited droplets like tiny pearls on Vimes' shirt as he prepared to break the law. If you stood on the roof of the privy behind the watch house and steadied yourself on the drainpipe, one of the upstairs windows would bounce open if you hit it with the palm of your hand in exactly the right place. It was a useful bit of information, and Vimes wondered if he should pass it on to young Sam. Every honest copper ought to know how to break into his own nick. Tilden had limped home long ago, but Vimes did a quick sweep of his office, and it was with great satisfaction that he did not see what he hadn't expected to be there. Down below, a few of the more conscientious officers were signing off before heading home. He waited in the shadows until the door had banged shut for the last time, for several minutes.